Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Thursday, the 28th of March. Today, I'm joined for the last time this week by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily ambassador. Hey there, Duncan, how are you doing today?
Hi, Peter, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thank you, all good. So, which story did you pick out from today's Watson's Daily then?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's appropriate for the time of year and the time of the week we're in. I picked out a story about Easter eggs.
Nice.
So this is a story from the Wall Street Journal about Easter eggs. So any chocolate fiends like myself will have probably noticed another story in Tuesday's Watson's Daily about rising cocoa prices.
Yep.
And this story kind of is a bit of a follow-on from that. And it talks about the fact that affordable Easter eggs might be harder to come by as a result of this rise in cocoa prices. Now, I'm going to be honest, that made me giggle when I read that this morning because I wasn't aware an affordable Easter egg was actually a thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of like grams per pound of money you get, they're not exactly the best bang for your buck anyway. So the idea that affordable ones are really hard to come by, I find a little bit amusing. But deep on that, this could be quite a problem for chocolate makers because realistically their production prices are going up. Mm-hmm. They're either going to have to take those on the chin or pass them on to customers. And that I think is going to be really problematic, particularly during a cost of living crisis. I think passing on that kind of increased cost to customers for a vast majority, I think, of confectionery manufacturers is going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So people like Lindt have already increased prices. Sorry, I'm not going to say the full company name because my German's not that good. It's Chocolat.
Hold on. Let's do it.
Sprungli,
yeah.
I think.
Chocolat, Fabriken, Lindt and Sprungli.
There you go.
Yeah,
in perfect unison, have already increased their prices. Now, I think that's probably a company that can get away with it because I think Lindt is a company that has already seen kind of as a more high-end manufacturer of chocolate. You don't go and buy Lindt because you're trying to buy a budget item, I don't think. Mm. But if companies like Nestle, for example, also have to increase prices, I think that's going to be more difficult to justify passing on to customers.
Yeah.
Because I think those are companies, that sort of company, are used to being seen really by customers as a cheaper alternative. Mm-hmm. And I think if this kind of continues and companies like that and Hershey and people like that end up putting prices up, you get dangerously close, I think, to chocolate being a luxury item rather than an everyday item.
Yeah.
Which I think, obviously, is quite a drastic shift in terms of how consumers see a product. If it goes from being, oh, yeah, well, I can afford to have a chocolate bar as part of my lunch every day, up to, well, actually, can I afford that? Does it become a weekly thing? Does it become a treat item?
Mm.
So obviously, that, I think, isn't ideal for chocolate manufacturers.
Mm.
The other thing I was thinking of with this as well is, well, does this going to kind of increase the popularity and sales of white chocolate items, for example, which have a much lower, in most cases, I think zero, cocoa content compared to, say, your dark chocolate that might have 85, 90% cocoa solids in it.
Mm.
You'd imagine that, obviously, if the price goes up related to the amount of cocoa that's in a product, which, again, might not be how they do it, you'd imagine that's going to affect dark chocolate more than milk chocolate.
Yeah.
Like I said, there is the obvious other alternative where they might just put a little bit on every product so that it doesn't feel like you're picking out people that like darker chocolate.
Mm.
But if it was related to that, you feel like milk chocolate products and then even more so white chocolate products, it might be a kind of a good idea for manufacturers to push those a bit more because, let's be honest, most people go for chocolate because it's sweet. And kids, I would say, have chocolate probably most. And milk chocolate and white chocolate don't taste that dissimilar. I mean, they do, but they're both quite sweet.
Controversial opinion there, but yeah.
This is also coming from me that prefers dark chocolate. And they're going, oh, no, please don't put the price. I think it's kind of tricky times, potentially, for chocolate manufacturers. I would say that in terms of this coming weekend, I don't think it'll make that much difference because I think that for a lot of people, you go and buy an Easter egg and you're aware it's going to cost more than chocolate normally costs. Easter eggs, I mean, you don't go and buy an Easter egg because of its budget value, let's be honest.
No.
You get a few hundred grams of chocolate for the price of like a tiniest little chocolate bar. It's not. But I think if however, that price increase continues across the rest of the year, that becomes more problematic, I think.
Mm.
think that if you sit there and go, your Easter egg's going to cost a pound more, people are going to go, well, it's expensive anyway. If you sit there and go, well, your Mars bar, your Dairy Milk, whatever, is going to cost 30p more a time,
yeah,
that I think is going to cause consumers a lot more kind of concern in terms of buying the products regularly. So yeah, I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing. Like I said, I don't think it's going to affect Easter, thank heavens, because that's on us now. But yeah, going forward, it could be quite problematic for chocolate manufacturers. What's your take on this one?
Well, before I say, what are your, just as a random question, top three chocolate bars as recommended by Duncan Balkan?
Top three chocolate bars?
Yeah.
Ooh. So, I'm going to make myself, having just said Lindt's a luxury item, I make myself sound like a right posh right now. I quite like the chili Lindt dark chocolate.
Oh, all right. Check you out.
Yeah, I know, right? If I was going for something kind of more mainstream, I really like a double decker. Really do like a double decker.
Yeah.
And probably crunchy was the third one.
Ah, interesting. Interesting.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. I'd say I think I'm very conventional. My top three would be Twix number one.
Nice.
Kit Kat number two, double decker number three.
So you like a chocolate bar with a bit of biscuit in it then?
It seems there is a bit of crunch. There is a theme going there.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the story. So it was quite interesting, actually, because last night I was watching a documentary, actually, about chocolate. I think it was about Cadbury's, mainly focusing on Cadbury's. And the reason why I'm saying that now is because you mentioned this as a luxury item. And, of course, in the historically, chocolate has been a luxury item. And then it was brought to the masses by Cadbury's, for instance. So it's interesting that maybe we seem to be reverting to history potentially, but like you say, I think that we are it's not gonna affect things now. It takes quite a while before it really filters through to prices that we will be paying, and there's not really much anyone could do about it. And I mean, another thing that I thought was interesting as well, just bringing in a few other sort of things from recent issues of Watson's Daily, but there's that hot chocolate place called Canoops, I like this, but I'm not sponsored or anything by them. They're a small, I suppose, artisan kind of hot chocolate place. I think they've got something like 30 outlets in the UK, but they've got deals to expand in Middle East, China, US, and they've got really big plans, and I think they're doing really well, and they need to act quickly because they don't have any real competition in what they do. Although I have said before that I think that, Hotel Chocolat, for instance, surely to goodness would see how well that's doing and think, well, we can do that. My point there is maybe that is going to make it a bit more problematic for Canoops to do its big expansion because of cocoa prices. Again, you do wonder what's going to happen with companies like Hotel Chocolat, because it has generally high, cocoa solids content and stuff, doesn't it? And, it is a premium. It's already extremely expensive. I mean, it's nice, but it's extremely expensive. This is going to affect things. But ultimately, I don't know. I don't think people are necessarily going to stop. Maybe it might mean they might not buy so many, perhaps. But even then, it might be a case of, to be honest, these kinds of things, like especially chocolate bars you see in news agents and things, and well, let's face it, WH Smith, there's been a sort of an increase in the size of chocolate bars. Maybe this will prompts shrinkflation again, in terms of the size of these things, because things like Kit Kat crunchies and things, they are huge these days, and you can get something duo, or I don't know, it seems to me that chocolate bars have actually grown over the years, so maybe this will you know, maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll keep prices the same, but make smaller bars and things. I that's what I would have thought.
I suppose we might see something akin to what we saw when the sugar tax increased on drinks, might we? Because a lot of manufacturers produced, to keep the price the same, produced a slightly smaller bottle of a fizzy drink. So the price stayed the same, but I don't know. Like you say, it's an interesting one, though, because I don't think people are going to stop buying chocolate. I think it's too much of an everyday thing for most people to consume it.
I have to say, it is one of my biggest weaknesses, chocolate. Yeah, it's my biggest weakness. And I have to say that life for me would be a lot more miserable if I didn't have that. To counter that, by the way, the thing that I possibly like, possibly even more than chocolate, is broccoli.
Interesting.
I know this is strange. And don't worry, I don't combine the two. So I'm a major broccoli fan. But anyway, right. So yeah, I think this is very interesting. And actually, on reflection, maybe we should have done that story last, because the story I'm going to talk about now is all about M&A. So it's not quite so fun, and it's not really Easter themed. So
it's just as important.
Yeah. So apologies to listeners there. I did this in the wrong order. But anyway.
Oh, well.
Story I want to pick out today, or it's actually a number of stories from today, so more of a theme, is about M&A deals. Now, it feels to me, obviously, I do this every day. I read newspapers every day. It just feels like there's more M&A going on. Now, actually, there was some... there was a story in the Financial Times today which says about how the London Stock Exchange analyzed some data and basically showed that the overall value of global M&A increased by 30% despite the total number of deals falling by 31%. And the number of M&A, that's over a year, I think that is, but the blockbuster deals have more than doubled in the first quarter. So that's amazing. I mean, the main thing, all the other figures, how much has gone up, etc. I mean, interesting. But the main thing is that, I mean, this doubling of M&A deals in the first quarter is pretty amazing. And it looks like, you know, the value of the deals is going up. It just feels like there's more going on. And to see this now, obviously, that will confirm the fact that there is more going on. I've been saying for a while now that it feels like things are moving. And I think it's a combination of the prospect of interest rates coming down, meaning that people are getting ready for more investment because borrowing money is going to be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a case of increasing consumer and business confidence. Now, a lot of that does derive from expectations of interest rates falling as well.
And then
you've got other things like private equity, which has bought loads. They borrowed when money was really cheap. They splurged over the last few years and had a great time buying up companies that were having problems, either during lockdown or following lockdown, so they could just sort of go in and snap up some decent things on the cheap. But they want to get, I mean, we've seen that they want to get rid of some of the things that they've bought over the last few years. Now, it might be a case of, see, because some of these private equity firms have ended up looking like mini conglomerates because they bought different assets over time by being opportunist. Whereas maybe now we'll see private equity firms going back to a bit more thematic type, investments. So, we are XYZ private equity firm. We predominantly, view ourselves as investors in the retail sector, for instance.
Yeah.
So then I wonder whether there's going to be some swapping around like that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, though, the fact that there just seems to be more of a desire or interest to go for flotations again. And just to illustrate that, obviously, today we talked about the owner of Formula One, that's Liberty Media. is talking to Dorna Sports, which owns MotoGP. You've got Citizen M, the sort of posh boutique hotel chain, looking to, you know, find a buyer potentially to expand. DS Smith, the cardboard box company, it looks like it has two potential suitors, and that's going on at the moment. And then, you know, there's been lots of consolidation within the oil industry, for instance, the oil and gas industry, and some, well, they say it's investments. I'd say quasi acquisition. I mean, that thing last week with what was it? So it was Microsoft and the co-founder of Inflection AI, where they took that founder on, the CEO, and they took 70 of the staff. Now, that sounds to me like a takeover.
That sounds more like an acquisition than hiring.
In all but name. And so, you know, maybe there's a bit of this going on as well. So, I mean, I think that it just feels that there's more willingness to do it. There's more positivity about the future. So that will help as well. And then there are lots of potential sellers of assets out there as well. So this could be a very interesting year, I think. But it feels to me like M&A is coming back. You've had recently, you know, accountancy firms and management consultancy firms really sacking loads of people and doing overhauls and stuff, and them saying it's because of the lack of deal flow. But it feels to me like they're doing this to clear the decks for when the M&A really starts rolling in. And I think that is, I personally think that is going to be this year.
Yeah. I would tend to agree with you. I seem to remember, I can't remember when it was, but some probably 6 to 12 months ago, I seem to remember having a kind of an almost like the opposite conversation to this with you about how the fact M&A was on its way out and like really down. Not, and then since then, anyone that's a loyal subscriber will have noticed there have been very few stories, really, whereas about M&A, whereas even a couple of years ago, there was almost daily stories about some really big deal going on. And I think it's really interesting. You can, if you keep on top of this stuff every day, you see like the odd story creeping in, and there's actually multiple stories today. And then obviously it builds from there. And this definitely feels like a turning point, doesn't it? You've gone from like almost not hearing about big M&A deals for ages to suddenly there's multiple being talked about today. And like I said, even though there's less deals, the value of them combined is up, which obviously people are prepared to put more money into things if they're sure of it per deal. And I think, like I said, for people like your management consultant firms who, like I said, have slimmed down, so they're ready for this, and your big law firms and things, this has got to be kind of potentially good news, because it's for a lot of, I mean, law firms particularly, it's a big part of their business, like big part of the lifeblood of the company is getting involved with M&A. And like I said, it has been on its way down for a while now. And if this is a turning point, which I agree with you, it is, and I would also expect this to kind of happen and really kind of kick off again this year, that's really good news for those sort of companies that get involved in these deals, particularly if less deals but more money, if you assume a percentage structure for fees. That's really good news, because if each deal is worth more, you'd think each company that can charge fees on each deal will be getting more out of it as well. And I feel I feel like that could start snowballing if more stuff starts happening. I think for a lot of people, this is starting to look like much more positive news in terms of M&A being back on the rise.
Yeah, I think so. And this is going to be good for investment banks, management consultancies, accountancy, like everyone. It won't be immediately, because I think that what they'll try and do is they'll squeeze as much as they can out of the existing staff who are left over. And then they may well start maybe, I don't know, end of this year into next year, start hiring again. I mean, and it also, by the way, depends on what happens on the political landscape as well, because of course we've got the US presidential election at the end of this year. We've got a UK general election as well, prime minister, our own general election towards the end of the year. So, yeah, I mean,
policy can make a big difference, can't it, as well? Different parties' policies can either benefit or scupper big business.
I mean, I would have thought very, very basically, I would have thought the more it looks like Trump will win, the more M&A there's going to be. I would imagine, because he is generally seen to be market friendly, but it depends. I think it will depend on what M&A it is, though. If it's M&A involving China, then no. but if it's if it's M&A amongst American companies to get more power, probably, you know, that's gonna, that they'll be okay, I would have thought. But then, you know, but then if it's in the UK, though, there is, so although the general macro environment is probably better and is, you know, there's fertile ground for M&A, the main caveat I have with that is, if people just don't know what's going on with the election and it's really tight, and the polls are really tight and it looks like it's not a foregone conclusion, what may happen is that companies decide to sit on the sidelines and wait until the beginning of the beginning of next year or something, wait until the dust settles after the after the election. So there is a risk that could happen, but ultimately, though, there will be plenty of opportunity. And if any investors that actually have they're sitting on a load of money, they will be in a very good position to, you know, make some decent acquisitions, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I can't add anything to that, I don't think.
Fair enough. Okay, well, look, I mean, I suppose we'll leave it there and leave everyone to chomp on their Easter eggs or go and choose their Easter eggs.
Absolutely.
I'm going to try and find that. There was one bloke I saw on Instagram who said, I've spent £550 on Easter eggs to try them and I've rated them. And he did a top 20. I mean, the lengths people go to just to serve the public. I mean, you know, what a hero.
Yeah, I mean, there's no part of him that just wanted to eat a lot of chocolate.
No. And I think I have to say, from what I hear on that one, I'm going to see if I can hunt down a Toblerone Easter egg.
Sound good.
See, yeah. But anyway, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your time, Duncan. I really appreciate it. No problem at all. Thank you very much for everyone for listening to this. Have a great day, whatever you're up to. Have a great long weekend if you are having a long weekend. And we'll be back again next week. Many thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.